You can listen to The Professional Left on iTunes, Stitcher Radio, or at our website, professionalleft.blogspot.com, where you can also contribute to this podcast. There is a PayPal button at our website, or you can mail us a letter and or contribution at P.O. Box 9133, Springfield, Illinois, 62791.
This is the podcast for October 31st, 2014. It's not safe for work.
Recorded live and once again, from just outside the Governor Chris Christie Charm and Etiquette Finishing School, it's the Professional Left with Drift Glass and Blue Gal.
And once again, Chris Christie proves beyond the shadow of a doubt that he has no disposition for governing.
Well.
Or politics. Or constituents.
Okay. That doesn't mean he won't be president.
I think it does. But I beg to differ with you. But
I don't think he will. But I think here's the thing. I don't think he will survive, or he don't think he can survive the Republican primary process.
Right.
But
right.
The reason he won't be able to survive it has nothing to do with the fact that he's a colossal dick.
Yeah, no, it has to do with the fact that he put his arm around the Negro president.
Yes, boom,
yeah.
Dead. You're dead man walking. Yep. But just because you have absolutely no interest in governing and you're
and assholes have risen to the ranks, let's face it. Yeah, yeah.
It's pretty much the whole thing. Their whole party is basically loudmouth punching the weak assholes.
Speaking of Dick Morris.
Yeah, what about Dick?
He's now a proctor for the Mensa qualification test, apparently.
Don't do
I
that
love
while
this story.
Don't do that while I'm drinking something, Blue Guy. Yeah.
I love this story.
Dick Morris knows
Dick
which
Morris
end of a
on Fox.
Dick Morris knows which end of a prostitute to lick. Let's put it that way.
Well, he also knows the difference between Joni Ernst and Sarah Palin.
Yeah.
Morris declared the disappearing candidate, Iowa Senate candidate, and Republican hog castrator, Joni Ernst, to be, quote, one of the superstars of American politics.
Yeah.
He went on to say that she was, and I quote again, Sarah Palin, but with much, much more in the way of gray cells. And I expect by gray cells, he meant hog testicles.
Yeah.
But,
well,
you know.
He's right in one very specific way. She is. She's a rising star in Republican politics.
Yeah.
And that, you know, we are two entirely separate countries now.
Yep.
With entirely separate values and entirely separate political systems and entirely different systems of valuing certain behaviors. And
I have to hat tip the commenter at Crooks and Liars. Dick Morris is a smarter, more Rico Suave Louis Gohmert.
Yeah, Dick Morris is too uptown for Texas. I don't think he'd run in Texas. You know, that's a pointy-headed liberal from, you know, because once upon a time he worked for Bill Clinton.
Yeah, right.
For a hot.
Well, he worked for himself, obviously.
Yeah.
But,
well, he worked for Bill Clinton for a hot minute and then has spent the rest of his career inventing stories about what monsters the Clintons are.
Yeah.
And feeding them and growing ever more bloated and terrifying. But that's
because he had to quit because he was caught using a prostitute.
Yes.
For toe licking. Yeah. Okay.
Yes.
Hey, Driftglass.
Yeah,
we are recording this on Thursday still. It's getting on to Friday, but happy birthday.
Thank
you. I hope you've had a really good birthday.
I have, right up until now. And then the wheels came off. Yeah. Well, you know, my birthday's got so much better once I smartened up and married you.
I'm so glad.
No, it's been a really good birthday. It's the reason we're recording this so late on a Thursday. And this is unprecedentedly late.
Yeah.
We should be in our jammies now, having graham crackers and watching, I don't know, Tinky Winky or something like that.
Something like that.
But it was a real crazy busy day, a really, really busy day. Just running and running since really before dawn this morning. I'm not, you know, it wasn't anything bad. It was just an asshole.
You had something to do from 7:30 on.
And we're sitting down and it is rapidly approaching Friday morning. So it's been a busy day, but I had a wonderful day.
You did. Good.
Some bad stuff happened, not to me personally, but just sort of disruptive and kind of depressing, and you got to hold people's hands and tell them it's going to be okay. And so, but you know,
well, you're excellent at that. So,
well, and I sat and compared where I was on my 40th birthday, which was a very bad birthday. And even
comparing any day to that day, it was bad. You had a really bad 40th. I didn't know you back then, but yeah,
I've heard
your mother tell me that she's very pleased that you survived those years. So,
And so, you know, I have many, 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 many fewer material things than I had back when I lived in Chicago. But you know what? At the end of my day, I had a family who was calling up and asking me when I'd be home because they wanted to see.
We wanted to celebrate.
And I have kids who are happy and stepkids, but I consider them my kids.
Oh, they're your kids.
To be anxious and happy and full of energy and doing kid stuff. And
when 10-year-old calls you to say, when are you coming home so we can sing happy birthday?
Yeah. And I spent the day helping people.
Yes, you did.
In a way that I think is tangible and good.
Yeah.
And I can sleep at night knowing that, you know, I'm no saint. God knows, Blue Gal. God knows. But I spent the day doing things I'm reasonably proud of for people that really, really appreciated it.
Let me just say, for the record, that Driftglass belongs to the William Kunstler School of Career Building. Do good rather than make money.
Yeah. Well, I'd like to do both.
Both of us are very happy with that. Well, no, I really think it's more important that you do. And I know that you're, you know, working two jobs and running the paper route on your bike and all this other stuff. Yeah. But the equivalent of that. But you are not working beneath your level of virtue. Let me put it that way.
I can sleep at night.
You can sleep at night and look in the mirror in the morning and know that you've made a difference in the world. So
if I'm doing William Kunstler, do I have to have a couple of mob clients to pay for everything else?
Well, you know, I don't know. Bill Kunstler, the reason I know so much about Bill Kunstler is my ex-husband wrote the biography of Bill Kunstler.
Yeah.
And so I was there for all the research for that book, and he did raise a glass at the at a mobster's dinner table where they'd gotten off for, you know, whatever charges they did, and Bill Kunstler raised his glass and said, "Here's to crime." And nobody laughed. Yeah. That really fell flat.
But they hired him again, didn't they?
They did. Well, he got them off, you know, like a lot of people. He was able to represent all kinds of people. What do you want to do first tonight? You want to do Esquire or you want to do Bible Bitch?
Well, I'd like to turn the floor over to my wife, the Bible Bitch.
Okay. Bible Bitch.
That's not scriptural.
Because I don't know what this is. You have given me no clue as to what it might be.
Well, no, I just want to talk about what happened at church last Sunday. And because I've been working on it this week.
Uh-huh.
I cried through the church service last Sunday.
You did.
Mm-hmm. And you're very good to just hold my hand and kind of help me get through it. But
I know when to bring a pocket full of tissues to church.
You do. And you know when there's a certain hymn coming up called Star Child.
Yeah.
That I'm going to leave the church and go to the bathroom and not sing that song because it makes me cry.
Mm-hmm.
This we often at our church have a section of our service devoted to mission.
Uh-huh.
And what that means is, how are we making the world a better place tangibly?
Yeah.
And very often it is a local service organization coming to our church, telling us about their work and how can we support them. Usually it's with a special collection. Sometimes it's with, we need food for a food bank. But always it's something about how can we help. And this particular Sunday, it was about homeless children, which I just couldn't take. And finding out how many homeless children there are in Springfield, how many children are sleeping on couches of relatives because they have nowhere else to go.
Uh-huh.
And it's in the four digits. It's over 1,000 in a city of 10,000 people?
112,000.
Yeah. 1,000 homeless.
And that's a conservative number.
That's
a nose counting number.
The nose counting is 700. And so they're figuring on 1,000 because it is self-reporting to the school districts. And so so I was visibly upset and beating myself up quite a bit afterwards because crying doesn't do any good. And I just felt like, okay, yes, I gave some money to this organization. Yes, I prayed about it. Yes, I certainly want to help more if I can. But the crying part of it, I just got kind of mad at myself. Like, really, my emotions are not what this is about, and I don't need to do this. And maybe I should find some more healthier way to show support for all children than just turning into a puddle of tears.
Well, and let me add my non-scriptural Philip, my little addenda, which is, yeah, my wife gets very emotional when it comes to children in peril.
Yep.
Children in danger, especially children. It's anybody, but especially children who are being deprived of a normal life.
Yep.
By the fact that they live in a society or a culture or with assholes or something. Something that's entirely, they have no fault for it. They're not, there's no child is to blame for anything.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just brutal and unfair and cruel. And it hits her hard mm-hmm. every time.
Yep.
But you always tend to land on the balls of your feet and that's come out true. Swinging afterwards.
Yes, I do.
So it's not like I cried and cried and I felt really bad. Then I felt better and about the kids suffering and I went on with my life. No.
Yeah, I stopped caring about homeless children after that because I'd cried it out. Yeah, no, that's not it. And I love the fact that I bumped into a friend of mine. The lady, there's all kinds of women in the church that do stuff all the time.
Yeah.
That place, the foundation of all of the service missions in the church is women.
Women. Oh, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. And the lady in charge of cancer
yeah, really.
Was there. I mean, I hate to put it, she would laugh if I said that. Like, this is the lady in charge of cancer. but she is a powerhouse who raises money for American Cancer Society like crazy.
Mm-hmm.
And, not Komen. You know, I mean, we're really kind of focused on trying to do the right thing. But she came over to me and said, are you okay? And I said, oh, you know, it's homeless children. I hear that and I just lose it. And she said, well, you know, my mother always said, the more you cry, the less you pee. I said, well, you know, if I'm going to turn into a puddle, I'd rather be tears than urine,
yeah.
right?
Yeah, especially in the pews.
Especially, the ushers have to clean that shit up.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, and I don't think that's actual scriptural. I don't think that's mentioned
anywhere.
That's
not scriptural. Just like I'm glad someone on Twitter pointed out that David Brooks' dick on a table is not scriptural.
No, it's not.
As we talked about last week. Go back to last week's podcast if you missed that treasure trove. Okay. Anyway, so I prayed about it this week. I really did. I thought, okay, what is it? What is the deal with the tears? And what's going on there that I'm feeling like that's either insufficient or not right that I'm crying about this?
And let's for our atheist friends.
Yes.
And for people who for whom that's a something they don't do or are unfamiliar with the practice. I know that sometimes people outside of a religion mm-hmm. might think praying is like, oh, Jesus, bring me a pony. And
no.
and then you get a pony, or you don't get one. You get mad because God didn't bring you a pony. I really don't think of it like that at all. I think of it like meditation, it clearing your mind by focusing on something and sort of very clearly focusing on a problem.
Yep.
Until you can figure out what the hell to do about it.
Yep.
In a way that's calm and thoughtful and a different state of mind
right.
than the sort of frantic everyday running around type of way.
Yep. And it's not like they did in Ricky Bobby. It's
no.
Little baby Jesus in the crib.
8 pounds, 7 ounce baby
8 pounds,
Jesus.
7 ounce baby Jesus in the diaper.
Uh-huh.
I like Jesus with the tuxedo t-shirt.
Yeah. It's not that.
And
it's not loud and it's not, you know.
It's not. It's silent. It's silent and it's doing dishes and it's thinking about it and thinking, okay.
And it's a way of, sometimes it's a way of reminding me, myself, of how lucky I am.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. Count your blessings is a big part of prayer. Absolutely.
Remember how much better you have it than other people.
Yep.
And then, calm your mind and help let yourself think of a way that you can creatively solve a problem. That's what it
is. Anne Lamott, in her wonderful book, reduces prayer to three words: help, thanks, wow. And that's, it's asking for assistance, thanking the universe or God or whatever for the blessings you have, and marveling at what you have. So anyway, and God loves atheists best, as far as I'm concerned.
Because they do it without the crutches.
That's right. Without the crutch of the, or the carrot or the stick of religion. Right. They are good and honest and true. And we appreciate that. But I thought about it. And I thought, you know, the reason that, one of the reasons I'm feeling upset about crying about this is that crying doesn't fix the problem.
Right.
And the thought came to me almost immediately after, like, tears aren't solving this problem. I thought, okay, the difference between charity and solidarity. Mm-hmm. And I realized, oh, if you're just crying about a problem, your tears will never fill that cup of need.
No.
Of helping homeless children or helping the homeless, you will never fill it with your tears. It doesn't fill up that way.
It's like Twitter. It doesn't really mean anything. You know?
Right. But there's a huge difference between charity toward the poor and solidarity with the poor.
Yes.
Where and you've mentioned this to me many times. There are people that want to give money to the poor.
Help
and there
poor.
Are people that want to end poverty.
Right.
Those are two very different things. You can want to do both. You can want to do both.
Absolutely. But they're radically
different
thinking about the same problem.
And there are churches that do all kinds of charity work by giving money to Haiti or to Africa. And we do that too. Haiti and Africa and, you know, raising money for universities and in far off lands and so forth is great. But if it is a charity situation where we will give to less fortunate people as long as we don't have to impact our lifestyle or our comfort zone.
Right.
You know, and we don't have a lot of those people in our pews, then it's okay.
Yeah. You know,
it's far off. We at a distance can be better than they are culturally or however racial. I have that in my head from The Daily Show about that woman who talked about not all cultures are equal, you know.
Yeah.
The Chinese immigrants, they don't get in trouble like the Hispanics. And she didn't even realize how racist she sounded, you know.
No,
she's standing there from a standpoint of white supremacy, right?
Yeah.
So she can judge everybody else as to whether they impact her life or not.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the only thing that matters. Well, and some people do that. They write checks to charity for the tax break or to feel better about themselves. You know, you have to look at motive. But solidarity with the poor, solidarity with women who are seeking reproductive rights is a very different thing from just charity.
Yeah, because suddenly their cause is your cause.
Right. And you're not doing it for them.
No.
You are with them.
Right.
That's the difference. So right after that, I came across, and I won't say at random because I don't believe in that, Philippians 2. And so I wanted to end Bible Bitch today by reading this because it's right on target. And we don't always appreciate Paul. Sometimes Paul's a little bit sexist. Sometimes Paul's a little bit sexist.
You know, a lot of people say
farty.
A lot of people say Philippians 2 is better than Philippians 1. I just think it's different. You know, they got a different director. It's the Philippinianing. It's a different take on the same thing, I think.
Well, and I think Paul, when he wrote to the churches, he was a good administrator and to churches full of men who had different attitudes than some churches had different attitudes than others. And I find it interesting that he wrote this to a specific church because I think they needed to hear what this message is. And this is from The Message, the modern translation of the Bible. It's Philippians 2. Think of yourselves the way Christ Jesus thought of himself. He had equal status with God, but didn't think so much of himself that he had to cling to the advantages of that status no matter what. Not at all. When the time came, he set aside the privileges of deity and took on the status of a slave. He became human. Having become human, he stayed human. It was an incredibly humbling process. He didn't claim special privileges. Instead, he lived a selfless, obedient life and then died a selfless, obedient death. And the worst kind of death at that, a crucifixion. And so I think about that in terms of solidarity. Think of the solidarity that Jesus had with humankind.
Mm-hmm.
And now this is me getting very Christian on everybody.
Yeah. Well, that's not surprising.
No offense.
You are.
No offense.
Not evangelizing. Just
not evangelizing. Oh, no, because I would never try to convert anybody. That is not my job. My job is just to share ideas. So what I think of Bible Bitch is just sharing ideas. And if Jesus humbled himself, who had equal status with God, but didn't think about that because he loved humanity, that's our job, to love humanity and set aside our privilege. That's the important thing to do. Is we have to set aside our privilege and have solidarity with those who need us.
I take a more writerly, not to undercut anything you just said. I just want to, because I agree with it.
Why don't you mansplain what Bible Bitch just said?
No, actually, you've explained it perfectly. I'm thinking more along the lines of the frustration, the dichotomy between Old and New Testament. And I look at it, that dichotomy as more of a writer. The dilemma of the Old Testament, you know, is that this has been said before by lots of people. God is both the hero and the villain. He, and it's very strictly a he, is terrible and vengeful and destructive and completely uncomprehending of what he has created. He has no fucking idea how humans operate at all. He just keeps, you know, treating his creation as if they were chess pieces.
Yep.
Or if they were a programmable machine. And if I just reboot them, if I just wipe them out and reboot them, eventually this will run correctly. And it never works that way. And so I look as a writer, as the New Testament, as, look, I need an interface. Because clearly I don't know. I really don't understand how my own creation even works. I understand birds and bees, and I understand fish, and I understand snakes. I don't have any idea how humans behave or think. They baffle me. They vex me. So he created this interface. Because human beings can't confront the infinite without going insane. And the infinite can't talk to humanity without killing us. So you have to have this thing in between that can participate wholly as one and communicate with the other so that we can talk to each other. It was an act of diplomacy almost, sending an ambassador. Now, who we killed? Because, you know, that's what we do. But as a writer, that's how I look at it. This plot problem of I don't know how to solve this problem, which is I don't know how to deal with my own creation. Well, okay, then I'll figure out a way to make this bridge and then watch it burn because mortality is, you know,
part of the package, right?
And anyway, that's the only thing I had to add to it. It was not an attempt to mansplain anything. I'm sure the Jesuits are just rolling their eyes going, did you sleep through the fucking class? Really? Really?
And one final note just to put a ribbon on this. The Virgin Mary stands with Planned Parenthood.
Yes.
All right.
Yes, she does.
And scene.
Yes. And she wasn't a virgin. And
well, you're going to go there.
I
just think the Virgin Mary accompanies every female into a Planned Parenthood clinic. She's right there with them. All right.
All right. What's next on our,
On our list? Esquire.
You want to do that?
Okay. Yeah, because I got to talk about Mrs. Rigel.
Rigel?
No, I want to talk about Mrs. Rigel.
Well, I mean, I only know Rigel because of the star.
Oh, okay.
So I assume that's how you pronounce it.
It's Republican Scott Rigel is a congressman from Virginia. He gets one. This is in the article in Esquire about what's it called? Our lives suck. It's not our lives suck. Our lives are a living hell. We're in a living hell and we can't get out. Yeah,
exactly. Yeah.
And it's about congressman. We talked about this article last week. And I read the whole thing. And I have to tell you that it is funny if you highlight everywhere where Republican congressmen attempt to make an equality with Democrats in terms of how bad things are.
Or as Joan Walsh refers to it, Brooksism.
Brooksism, yes.
And we'll get to that.
That was a nice little birthday gift Joan Walsh gave
that
you.
That really was. A cupcake with one candle. Yeah. But this
Republican, So if you go in and highlight all of the times Republican congressmen say, you know, I've got this horrible problem. I have these crazy people in my party. I have the Club for Growth ready to primary at me at the drop of a hat. But the Democrats.
Yeah. That's their excuse.
And that's their excuse is, every you know, they got the crazy liberals over there, too. Yeah. Uh-huh. And so we can't get anything done. Yeah. Uh-huh. So this thing just jumped. This passage jumped out at me. Republican Scott Rigel of Virginia said, quote, "We get one ticket to the State of the Union for the gallery, and so my wife attends. And this year I came home from the speech and she said, Scott, I'm just struck by this, that the Republican side is just all white." Good for her.
Yeah.
She noticed.
Yeah.
The Republican side is just all white. And then you look over on the Democratic side and, you know, it really doesn't look like America either.
Yeah. Yeah. Just, what do you say to that?
It's disproportionately represented the other way.
What other way? You mean chicks? There's so much weird in that sentence.
And so who did they get to remind everyone that the Democratic conference in the House does look like America?
Yeah.
John Lewis of Georgia said, oh, no, it looks just like America. Yeah.
It's just like
the guy who left his blood on the Edmund Pettus Bridge on the march from Selma to Montgomery in 1965 can tell you, Mrs. Rigel.
Yeah.
This looks just like America.
And he's a gracious and kind man who did not go up and just throw her off the balcony.
Her.
Yeah.
Right.
Yes.
Like throw her off the fucking balcony like that guy from New York, from Staten Island.
Oh, yes.
Right?
Yes. Grimm.
Grimm from Staten Island, which has thrown her off the balcony. But no, John Lewis has class.
John Lewis is class down to his shoes.
Yes, he does.
And he
said, the country is changing and change makes some people uncomfortable.
Yeah. Fuck those people. Sorry. But look,
John Lewis did not say
that. No, that's
Drew
saying that.
But anyway.
It's real simple. Either America is an idea, in which case it doesn't matter what color the people are, or America is blood and soil, in which case it's just 1920s Germany.
Yep.
Period.
Period.
And if it's an idea, you shouldn't care. You should be thrilled. You should be fucking thrilled that people of all stripes and hues and religions want to adopt your idea.
You should be horrified that your party doesn't.
Yeah, that should just sicken you.
Yep.
But it doesn't, because the other side is just as bad.
So let's talk about Minnesota for a minute.
It's the same thing. It's exactly
the same thing.
And I hate to say this, but we're sort of leading up to something. Actually, we're not really. It's just there are so many stories like this
that are all dovetailing at the same time to the same point. Yeah,
it has a lot to do with the fact that it's, you know, we're running up to an election and the pot is boiling really fast and people are shooting their mouth off right and left. I don't know if you know this, but John Boehner talked about how George Bush would never have put up with Vladimir Putin invading another country.
Oh, and did you hear? I think I emailed you today that
he would have punched
the House GOP lawyers. Dropped the lawsuit against Obama today. Yeah,
quietly. Very quietly.
Yes.
No, George Bush would have punched Vladimir Putin in the nose if he didn't. Like, what the fuck are you talking about? He did invade another country.
He did. He actually did.
Yes. And George Bush took some shit for being, you know, weak and vacillating when he did it. And I understand, you know, but someone sent that along to me with a question mark strategic forgettery. That's my phrase for Republicans who just strategically forget vast swaths of history that don't agree with what their party line is today. But I'm getting ahead of myself.
Well, George Bush, you know, 2 years after 9/11 decided he wasn't going to think about Osama bin Laden.
Osama bin Laden.
No more. Don't think about him.
There's a much longer, one day I'll do a TED Talk. No, I won't. That's a lie. No one's ever going to invite me to do a TED Talk. One day I'll do a New York Times. No, they're not going to do that either.
A YouTube and I'll produce it.
One day I'll be on a street corner yelling at people about...
You can wear your Halloween mask on the YouTube.
Yeah, that's good. That's a good idea. Except it smells funny. In the Minnesota congressional race, one of my alert readers sent this along to me. And just, you could hear his head pounding. Mm-hmm. Because this is, and I know that most of our listeners know this already, once you start looking for this shit, once you sensitize your palate to it, it's everywhere.
It's everywhere.
It's terrifying how much the groundwater is totally polluted mm-hmm. with David Brooks thinking. Mm-hmm. That's why I go after the headwater of the Nile, because everything else has been polluted by this one thought, which is, no matter how awful Republicans are, I have to punch a hippie somewhere, or they won't invite me on Hardball.
Right.
They won't invite me on Meet the Press. They won't let me on TV unless I agree with the Washington Press Corps that liberals are always just as bad. So in the debate in the Minnesota congressional race, this ignited a discussion about the intensity of the candidate's partisanship. Westrom blamed Democrats for a host of problems. He's the Republican. Obamacare was, quote, passed by Democratic leadership, and the Keystone Pipeline, of course he's going to talk about the fucking Keystone Pipeline, mm-hmm. is still not built because of President Obama's administration. Peterson, the Democrat, highlighted studies that show him among the most moderate House lawmakers. Like, that's a fucking virtue. Pardon my language. But Westrom said if this was the case, he wouldn't have backed Pelosi. Again, magic conjure words.
Yeah,
Nancy
yeah.
Pelosi, she's like left of Stalin. So mm-hmm. if you backed your own House Speaker, that must mean you are untrustworthy.
Mm-hmm.
Whose, quote, agenda does not match the District 7 agenda. When you have leaders like that so far to the side, to the left, it's hard to get things done. Now, the proper answers to this is to do a Paul Wellstone, which is walk across the stage and say, are you fucking kidding me?
Yep.
But, of course, being a pussy, Peterson didn't do this.
And I want to point out that none of these assholes ever remember, speaking of strategic forgettery, just how much Nancy Pelosi got done in that House.
No.
She has seven times the balls of any one of those jackasses.
Yeah. And the stuff she got done was important.
Yeah.
She got done lots of important things. Now remember, you're making the mistake, Blue Guy. Let me mansplain this to you. You're making the mistake of thinking that Republicans care about governing. They don't.
Yeah.
So getting nothing done for them is a good day. But when you're running for office, you have to at least pretend that you care about the process of government. So the answer would be verbally punch this guy in the throat.
Mm-hmm.
Say, okay, who the hell is the liberal Louis Gohmert? Who the hell is the liberal Michelle Bachmann? Go down the list. Bring in Rush Limbaugh. Bring in Sean Hannity. Bring in the entire Fox network. Who the hell are the liberal equivalents of people who think the earth is flat and 6,000 years old? Mm-hmm. Explain that to me, and I'll sit here and wait until and the minute you start bullshitting, I'm going to interrupt you, but I'm going to give the rest of the stage to you to explain to me who those people are and where they're hiding, because I've never met them.
Mm-hmm.
But he didn't do that. What did he do? Instead, he said, it's a matter of working with the members send to Congress with you, and the Democrats aren't alone in sending partisans to Washington. So right there, he has bought into the argument,
mm-hmm.
and that means he's lost.
Yeah.
And here's his final quote. You can find people on your side of the aisle in Washington who are just as out of the mainstream as the people on my side, he said. You've got the Tea Party folks on the one side and liberal Democrats on the other. And that's part of why we have the gridlock in Washington. And this is why Democrats lose. Period.
Yep.
This is why, because I don't know if he's going to win. I don't know if he's going to lose. I don't really care.
What did you call him?
Bivalve Democrats. I'm sick of Blue Duck. Bivalve Democrats.
No brain, no spine, and bottom feeding. That was it.
And they hide in their shell. And
this is the Democrat saying this.
It's like being in a horror movie in my old neighborhood in the 80s.
Mm-hmm.
Because everyone in my head is screaming at the screen, don't do it. Don't say it. Please, for God's sakes. Because you know how it's going to end. But this absolute reflex response on the part of lots of Democrats, not all of them, but lots of Democrats, to collapse and beg forgiveness for their party being bad. They're all bad, but I'm not bad. Great. That's wonderful. Roger Ailes just won.
Yep.
Roger Ailes just
congratulations.
Just congratulations. You just validated everything that they say about us, and you just threw the rest of us under the bus to save your fucking job.
Yep.
So I don't want to know you. I don't want to know you. And
I want to know you if you're the 51st vote in the Senate.
Exactly.
Because that's the problem.
I'll put up with the
problem. Yeah.
Until we have a whole bunch of Bernie Sanders in the Senate.
Yeah.
On that great and glorious coming home day when Bernie Sanders is the most conservative member of Congress. until then, I want to hang on to what I have. And get a little more back. I want Elizabeth Warren in there until she is 107. But and actually, this leads right up to a very good article by Charlie Pierce.
I
me and Charlie share some writing DNA.
You sure do.
He should have the people at Esquire hire me. Although I hear there's a job opening at First Look.
Have you heard about this, folks? Pierre Omidyar?
Yeah, Omidyar.
Omidyar. He was going to hire Matt Taibbi.
He did hire him.
He did hire him.
He hired him. He hired him for a hot minute. For months. For months. No, Matt Taibbi was hired. He was on staff. He had the front page. I took a screenshot of this before it went away and everyone forgot about it. There was coming soon on the front page of First Look Media. Mm-hmm. It was going to be this multi-armed platform that he was going to spend $250 million on. And first out of the box, we're going to get Jeremy Scahill, and who I like. I disagree with on some things, but he's really good. And Glenn Greenwald, with whom I've had disagreements. But it was going to be those people first, and Linda Poitras and a few others. Then they were going to have Matt Taibbi. So you're going to have essentially the Greenwald arm called The Intercept, which is all about spying and NSA stuff mostly. And I don't want to discredit them or say what they're not. I don't read them every day, so I'm not sure. But then Taibbi was going to come in there and be the sort of the Wall Street guy. And apparently that didn't work out really well. Apparently, like a lot of people warned, when you have a Silicon Valley billionaire setting up shop for you and covering your checks and eventually he decides that he's going to want to interfere with the editorial process or the governance process or the hiring process more than maybe you're comfortable with if you're actually an independent journalist. And so there was at one moment last night, there was at the bottom of the page was the coming soon. Matt Taibbi's awesome racket is going to be here. It's going to be great. And at the top of the same page was, we regret to inform you that Matt Taibbi and I have parted company.
Yeah.
Due to differences.
But I want to talk about Charlie Pierce because this really is a good article he wrote. And it's tragic.
Well, Charlie, either they should hire me or apparently CNN has money to burn.
Yeah.
But not $5 million. But no. We'll get to that in a minute.
No, let's get to that right now.
Yeah, you want to do that right now?
They would not hire David Gregory because he's too expensive. All right, but now let's get to Charlie Pierce.
Yeah.
Because this is a sad, sad story.
It is, and it's right on target. Charlie Pierce, here's the point. This is near the bottom of the article. The point being that there's a survey that shows that Elizabeth Warren's message resonates with 3/4 of the American people. That the people have gotten it, that they've been screwed, they've been bamboozled, they've been cheated.
That our economic system benefits the wealthy.
Yeah, it's rigged. It's a rigged
game. It's not fair,
on purpose,
and it's not fair. Right.
And he calls her Senator Professor Warren, and SPW is his acronym for her in some cases. So this is near the bottom of the article. But here's the problem. They buy her message, so why aren't they voting for Democrats? And here's why. In other words, I'm quoting Charlie Pierce now, SPW's basic message has gotten through to almost 3/4 of the country. That's not bad for someone who wasn't even a politician 6 years ago. But because of the effective campaign of vandalism run by the Republicans of Congress, and because of the complete inability of the Democratic Party to craft a consistent economic message that doesn't sound like warned over DLC hash, and yes, dear friends, because the twice-elected Democratic president didn't choose to hold completely responsible the grifters and thieves who rigged the system in the first place, there's absolutely no way at the moment for any Democratic politician, including SPW, to take full advantage of the success of her message. Mm-hmm. People want what Senator Professor Warren is selling. They just don't want to buy it from Democrats.
Because Democrats never tried to sell it to them before.
Right, right. They were too busy agreeing that we need to cut deficits. Right. In the middle of the worst recession, the worst collapse in 70 years, what we most needed to do was cut government spending because David Brooks said so. Mm-hmm. And a bunch of panic peddlers said so because we're going to become
greedy.
And
unfortunately, what eventually the Democratic Party needs to learn, they need to learn from Newt Gingrich.
I was going to say they need to learn from Newt Gingrich and Roger Ailes.
Yeah. Every time you go to a microphone, you need to say, Republicans destroyed the economy. Republicans want to shut down the government. Don't you get it that Republicans are not your friends?
Republicans
they are not interested in fair economy for anybody.
Republicans hate this country.
Yeah.
They love their country, and they want to turn your country into their country.
Right.
And their country is run by two groups of people, theocrats and oligarchs.
Rich white people.
Yep. And everybody else is a fucking peon. starving to death and living on what falls off the master's table.
And dying as quickly as they can without health care.
And that's their vision of heaven. And if you can't, by your own efforts, by your own bootstraps, elevate yourself from the gutter to the palace all by yourself, then it's all your own fault.
And they have no time for you. Yep.
And if you
But then both sides strip glass.
Exactly.
See, now both sides are just extremists. Yeah. Politics is just so mean now because both sides. And we found out this week from the New York fucking Times.
Yeah. From Tom Edsall.
Yeah.
The New York Times. You know what? Turns out, I'll just direct you to the article. I'll give you the gist of it. But I feel vindicated isn't the right word because everybody I know knows this.
Mm-hmm.
But apparently moderate centrists were really an illusion all along.
Yep.
It's
and they did this by polling.
Yeah. And how you measure things.
Yeah. Yeah.
It turns out the individual constituents of the two major parties, let's say, are actually much more partisan and opinionated than their politicians are.
And overall much more liberal.
Yeah.
In terms of wanting redistribution of wealth.
Mm-hmm.
That goes in these ranks in the 70% range over most Americans.
Yeah. Yeah.
And then the more conservative pillar is about 20%.
But the way they have been measuring these things, which is, he's okay with pot, but he wants every fetus to have a gun.
Yeah, so he's a moderate. So
add up and divide by two. That means he's a moderate.
Yeah.
No, it means he's a libertarian and he's nuts. But it absolutely does not mean he's moderate.
Yeah.
So they have been calculating, and this is I cannot believe this is accidental because it's so obvious to any honest observer
that the mainstream media is interpreting polls to serve their own Rolodexes. Absolutely.
Exactly.
Yep.
And even Joan Walsh. Finally, I'm not going to say.
She put a big ribbon on an article for you today.
She did. And, you know, you've interviewed Joan Walsh, haven't you?
I have. She's a doll. I love her. She retweeted me, and she retweeted the person who said, you know, Driftglass writes about just what you wrote about for years. He's been doing this. And she retweeted that. So she's not Chuck Todd and saying, you know, I don't understand why people are even asking these questions of me. No, she gets it.
No, but she wrote a column called
David Brooks today. Yes.
Yeah. Well, he wrote David Brooks. I don't want this to be the David Brooks corner, even though it'll evolve into that quickly. wrote another incredibly stupid column for the New York Times on partyism. As she pointed out, there's already a word for this. It's called partisanism. David Brooks said partyism is worse than racism. And because, you know, there's this poll that shows that more people don't want their people marrying a member of the other party or dating a member of the other party. And she deconstructed that ludicrous core of this article. Like, no, you don't get to be fired or discriminated against on a job application or buying a house if you're a Republican. You don't do this. And by the way, if you just believe in lower taxes and less regulation, you want to date my daughter, maybe you're a really nice guy. I wouldn't have a problem with that. But if you are a hate-spewing lunatic who watches Rush Limbaugh all day long, I don't want you anywhere near my kids.
Yeah,
I think you're fucked in the head. And I'm interpreting her much kinder words. But the column title is David Brooks' Dumbest Column Yet, Fighting the Scourge of Partyism. The real problem is Brooksism, she says. Republicans ignoring that their party has moved so far to the right it won't govern. You know, I've been writing that 3 days a week, every week, 52 weeks a year, for 10 years. And so far, I haven't budged anybody. It's easy once you come to understand that David Brooks doesn't, quote, report on, quote, facts. David Brooks writes Whig fan fiction. He writes fairy tales about an alternate universe where people like David Brooks run things.
Mm-hmm.
And Rush Limbaugh doesn't exist. And that's the world he lives in. And he doesn't trouble himself by sullying his feet by going out into the real world and meeting with real people. He just writes about this little gated, mental gated community where he and his friends all live. And that's what's so very dangerous. Covered this beat now for 10 years. All the upper middle class professionals all agree David Brooks is really a smart cookie, knows what's going on. And he doesn't. he is selling a slightly different brand of poison than Rush Limbaugh, but they're in the same business. And it's terrifying to me to see people imbibe it, because the alternative is to see the world as it really is, which is terrifying to them, which is that the Republican Party is full of crazy people who want to wreck your country. And you're going to have to do something about it pretty goddamn quick, because they're getting awful close to succeeding. And they don't want to acknowledge that. That's terrifying. Yep. So they go along with this both sider nonsense. And then you see that after you've seen that happen for a decade now, and actually much longer than that. I only started writing, but I didn't start seeing in 2005. I started seeing long before that. You see it manifesting itself everywhere. You see it manifesting itself in Minneapolis. You see it manifesting itself on the Sunday shows. You see it manifesting itself in how the debate is framed in every fucking venue on public television, on public radio, on POTUS radio, on the whole no label scam. It's like Agent Smith in The Matrix. It's this horrible idea that keeps replicating itself, and it doesn't matter what you do. It doesn't matter how many times you write about it, or how many times you disprove it, or how many times Joan Walsh says that's crazy, or how many times Paul Krugman says David Brooks is out of his mind. It doesn't matter. It just keeps going on and on and on. So, and that idea gives such aid and comfort to conservatives, because every time they fuck up, they just flip open the playbook and say, oh, well, all I have to do is say both sides are wrong and I get off the hook. So thank you, David Brooks.
Yep.
Which is why I say over and over again, don't go after Rush Limbaugh. If you only can go after one thing, don't go after Rush Limbaugh. Nothing's going to move him. Mm-hmm. Go after the centrists. They're the enablers of Rush Limbaugh. Without him, without David Brooks, Rush Limbaugh is just a lunatic raving in front of a microphone who's been isolated and shoved out to sea. He's just the Birch Party.
Mm-hmm.
Without any following, and people just horrified to be around him and shunning him in public. He'll still have a following, but he won't have power. With David Brooks, he has power. And that's what makes David Brooks so dangerous.
You're listening to the Professional Left Podcast, professionalleft.blogspot.com.
Each week, we post to our Facebook page and website an Internet Kitty sent in by you, the listeners. This week's Internet Kitty is Emmy. Emmy is such an angry cuss mouth, she could give lessons to Bristol Palin. Her caretaker, I will say, we never say master or owner, not around a cuss mouth like Emmy, who would just get in big trouble.
Because she'll cut you.
She'll cut you.
She'll cut a bitch. I'm sorry, but that's,
Caretaker, Emmy's caretaker says that Emmy weighs 5 pounds and every one of them is angry.
One quick thing. Can I one brief aside?
Yeah.
Harlan Ellison has returned home.
Oh, good. Good, good, good.
Just in time for his favorite holiday in mind, Halloween. Harlan Ellison is back at his house. He's recovering. I don't know how far along he is, but he's out of the hospital.
Yeah, maybe he can do physical therapy by throwing candy at all the little goblins that comes to his house.
Well, I was going to say, he gives away comic books at his house, I believe.
Oh, wow.
Which is awesome.
Good for him.
I saw 5 pounds and every one of them angry. Go, by the way, Harlan Ellison.
5 pounds and every one of them is angry. Harlan Ellison, yeah. You know, next time we get a cat, we could name it Harlan Ellison if you want.
That's
another discussion for another day. It's like naming your child. You can send your Internet Kitty to us at our email address, proleftpodcast@gmail.com, where you can also write to both of us. Feel free to write us. We love hearing from you. And if you wish to leave a birthday wish for Driftglass, please do so at his blog, driftglass.blogspot.com. Be aware that if you write us anywhere, we reserve the right to read your email or U.S. Postal Service. Go Postal Unions! Letter on the air unless you say otherwise.
So, Blue Gal, how are the Internet Kitties doing this week?
This year, the Internet Kitties are dressing up as Matt Taibbi.
Let's think about living. Let's think about loving. Let's think about the hooping and the hopping and the bopping and the loving, lovey-doving. Let's forget about the whining and the crying, the shooting and the dying, and the fellow with the switchblade knife. Let's think about living. Let's think about life.
The Professional Left Podcast is recorded under a Creative Commons license, copyright 2014, Driftglass Blue Gal Podcast.
Minecraft is awesome. Now it's time for Science Fiction University with our science fiction expert, Driftglass.
Hello, beautiful. How are you?
I'm fine, and we're recording.
Excellent.
So let's get started right away with Science Fiction University.
All right.
And this is the last time for a while that we will be doing novelty music as part of Science Fiction University. We're going to get back to science fiction questions next week. But these were kind of fun Halloween-y type music for our Halloween podcast. So we thought we'd do these five. And then I understand that these came from Dogface Herman. I understand you have a challenge.
I do.
For Dogface Herman and our listeners after this part of the show.
I do and I shall.
Okay, well, let's get started. This is number one. All of these are, again, novelty songs from various decades, and none of them are Monster Mash. I'll just disappoint you right up front.
Yeah.
Number one, let's listen to this one.
I, master of illusion. But your mind may refuse to believe. Permit me to show you a few of the tricks I perform in the Wizard of Gore.
Not any idea.
Okay, this one is Messer Chups, Rocket Creature from the Black Lagoon.
Cool.
Cool. All right. Number two is actually a band I've heard of, so
okay,
let's play this one. It kind of has a
Sex Pistol-y kind of thing.
Sex Pistol kind of feel to it. Yeah.
Same era, same
punk band.
Clearly. I just don't know. I apologize.
It is the Cramps.
Oh.
You remember the Cramps? I remember the Cramps. Yeah.
I was sort of busy.
Yeah, with other things.
But when they called.
Yeah.
I do remember
this song is called Zombie Dance.
All right. Well, good.
All right.
Very good.
Here's another one you might be familiar with. We've actually played them on the Science Fiction University before. I'll give you that clue.
Oh, yeah.
Number three.
Oh, if I had a memory for obscure bands, the ones that Quentin Tarantino has introduced me to, I would know this, but I don't.
This is, again, Man or Astro Man. I think we played them last week. This one is called King of the Monsters.
I just want to stop and say that you just sounded exactly like every college station at 2 in the morning. And that was, again, Man or Astro Man. Somewhere out there.
I am capable of pulling out my midnight college radio disc jockey voice when I need it. Yes.
It's the again part. Like, that's
again,
their feature.
Man or Astro Man.
Yeah.
And again, here we are, a deep cut. Here's number four.
I don't know. They sound good.
The Dickies.
Mm-hmm.
The Dickies are Attack of the Mole Men.
Okay, so.
And the last one.
I was shooting the pipeline just the other day. It's hard to tell, but the
Really?
Well, you know, you were talking about Spies Who Surf.
Spies Who Surf,
you know.
Yeah. And there is a way big, huge overlap between surf music, and then you sort of throw in some distortion and reverb and it becomes monster music or sci-fi music. Yep. I don't have a clue.
You do know this song is called The Creature Stole My Surfboard. You can tell that from the song.
Yeah, but
and it's by the Dead Elvi.
Okay.
All right. And now you have a challenge.
I do. I have a challenge for Dog Face Herman.
All right. Let's play this music, and then what do you want people to?
I would like you to
write
guess,
in about.
I would like you to guess without looking on the YouTubes, without going out and looking up lyrics. Do it as you know, blindfolded as Drift Class does.
Mm-hmm.
Give me the person who produced the album.
Okay.
Who's the creator of the album? And who was the original artist for the song?
All right. Who wrote the music or who wrote the lyrics? Who wrote the lyrics? Okay.
Mm-hmm.
So who produced the album and who wrote the lyrics?
Yeah, I'm not sure if the person produced it, but who created the album? Whose album is it?
All right.
Whose
name is on the outside of the album? Right.
Yeah.
Okay. Got it.
And who wrote the lyrics?
Okay.
Roderick, whatever thy image may be, Roderick, no magic shall sever the music from thee. Thou hast bound many eyes in a dreamy sleep. Oh, tortured day, the strains still arrive. I hear the bells. I have kept my vigilance. Rain dancing in the rhythm of a shower. Over what guilty spirit do not hear the beating? Do not hear the beating heart, but only tears of perfect moan. Only tears of perfect moan.
And you can write to us at proleftpodcast@gmail.com.
Mm-hmm.
Put in the subject line of your email, Science Fiction University Answer.
Yes. Let us know.
We will pull a winner.
Yeah.
And thank you, Drift Class. And thank you, Dogface Herman. These are really fun to listen to.
They are. They are. Even though I listen to them, I go, oh, no. I know a guy who would know this and who used to look at me with befuddlement when he would put on something that sounded to my untutored ear like, I don't know, someone taking a hacksaw to a windbreaker. But he knew all these. You know, this was his thing. And I really appreciate people who have this level of nerdy engagement with their obsessive interest. I have mine, obviously. This is called Science Fiction University for a reason. So way to go, Dogface Herman. Oh, and happy Halloween. Happy Halloween, everyone.
Yeah, happy Halloween, and I love you.
I love you, too.
So this is episode 256, or 2 to the 8th power.
Yes.
Or 1 bite.
1 bite.
Yeah, 256 possible states of information. Wow.
Line up.
Really nerdy.
Well, it's ones and zeros. So you have a line of eight digits and one or zero. That's 256 possibilities.
Wow.
Very computer nerd.
That's
old school, baby.
Old school.
Yeah.
All right. Well, we are ready to start this mathematically wonderful podcast.
Let's light this candle, shall we?
Sure.